This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
I wanted to talk a little bit about confusion, anger, you know, whatever. Pick something, right? Pick an emotion. In light of the statistics that have been coming out about the death toll as a result of Hurricane Maria, and I was wondering, and not to politicize it, right? I don't care about the politics of it. I want to come at it from the angle of, you know, how should we be calculating the death toll in the aftermath of these natural disasters? A lot of the debate thus far has been, you know, in comparing, number one, the immediate deaths, the immediate death toll that was reported right after Hurricane Maria, right, which was in the double digits. And then, you know, the subsequent study that came out of Harvard and was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. I think Penn State came out with a study soon after that. And then the most recent is the GW death toll. And, you know, if we think about the numbers that came out, I think the lowest one is, you know, 1,085 out of Penn State. And, you know, the GW study, I think, was 2,975 deaths. And then the Harvard study has this range of 700 right. from 793 to almost 8,500, with the midpoint being 4,645. And that's the number that gets reported.
I mean, I took a look at the New England Journal of Medicine article that we were circulating this morning, and like it looks like they did just a sound sort of classic survey research with a rural oversample, and they were careful about their weighting and all of that. And I mean, I'm not an expert on any of these things, but what it strikes me is this is the type of role that I would love to see scholars playing in the political process, right? There's a factual question. It's up for debate, and you get some professional researchers who foreground, a very careful research design. They spell it out. We're able to look at it, and we get the basic facts that other people can use to mull a big political issue. For me, not knowing a lot about death counts, it's not my area. It's wonderful to see social scientists playing the role that I think.
Well, I was going to say, it seems to me a big part of sort of the protesting of these numbers is that, I think I'm correct in this, is that up until this point in time, when people had tried to come up with a number for death tolls in the aftermath of a hurricane, right, they only collected the numbers that were the direct result of the hurricane, right? And the thing about these studies is these studies try to assess the death tolls that came about as an indirect result of the hurricane. So you didn't die during the hurricane, right? But you died in the aftermath of the hurricane because of things that the hurricane affected.
Yeah. So I mean, and that's obviously something you want to do where, the direct effects, you know, seem to be pretty small, but the indirect effects are huge, which makes complete sense when you talk about, you know, large parts of a, I don't know what to call it, a colonial dependency territory, or without electrical power infrastructure for a year. It makes sense that you'd have really high excess mortality. I'm also not an expert on these methods, but it does remind me there was a study that got a lot of play about 10 years ago. Estimating excess mm-hmm. mortality as a result of the Iraq War. And it came up with a much higher number than people had before. Mm. And people kind of took that as a number. And then other people started looking at the numbers after the fact. They noticed that it implied that pre-war Iraq had an absurdly low mortality rate. So something like that seemed implausible. And I don't think the study was ever retracted, and it definitely didn't involve fraud. But, people eventually came up to some type of estimation of how they got such high numbers, and there was a comment attached to the article, and that those numbers from that initial article generally aren't accepted. So, point being, you know, I think it's probably in this order of magnitude of around 1,000, and that seems completely plausible to me of what you'd expect to have if you have, you know, a large, highly populated area lose electrical power for a year, or at least substantial parts of it. But, you know, the methodology, so the number seems plausible to me, right? Totally. And, you know, the idea of like, oh, it's 6 to 18 is stupid. But, you know, I also know that this method can be highly driven by assumptions, data quality, all those sorts of things. And so it's a little bit iffy, even though the numbers do sound completely plausible to me.
Yeah, because sometimes people aren't totally objective in the way. Sorry to bring up an old topic.
Hold on, though. Wait, objective in what sense? Because if you read those numbers properly, as they are supposed to be communicated, what you can conclude is like that the deaths were in the thousands, not in the tens. And when people are like 4,312 versus 2,904, that isn't the method that is giving you that artificial.
Oh, yeah, only a fool would take the point estimate.
That is the misreporting of point estimates that's driven by a fundamental misunderstanding of how precise the information that can be gleaned. Is it objective? I think it is objective in the sense that what happened was there was a research design that could have rendered, that seems like it could have rendered estimates where it was 50 deaths, or could render estimates that there were 10,000 deaths, but they took an empirical method, they gathered the data, they processed it, and they gave the results. Is it 2,000? Is it 4,000? Is it 9,000? It could be in any of those ranges. What this study did was it established that the deaths, or it gave us good reason to believe that the deaths were far, far higher than what was created before. And I do see it as objective, but I see like there's a question of objective, but an error makes it incorrect. But then there are studies that are objective and do a good job of reporting the numbers, but people misunderstand the nature of those results. And the flaw is actually in the leap from empirics to drawing.
Well, conclusions. You definitely have people, there's two errors in interpretation. You know, one is like you were saying, people, generally speaking, people who like the study, you know, not like they've actually dug into the methods or know jack all about demography, but people who, you know, are broadly comfortable with the conclusions, they reify the point estimate, you know? So that's one way to misinterpret it. And the other way to misinterpret it is to confuse the issue of excess mortality, which implicitly prices in indirect effects of the hurricane with, you know, the direct cause, which is what the president did, right? Where he's like, you know, basically only, you know, a dozen people or whatever got knocked over by the windstorm or drowned or whatever. And so how could it be thousands of people had excess mortality? You know, and that's confusing two different things. So there's two different ways to confuse the study. You know, and, you know, the idea of just not even getting that it's trying to measure excess mortality from indirect causes is obviously the more egregious one. But, you know, confidence intervals matter. And it's worth taking seriously that, especially when you're dealing with something where you're not even attempting to count, you're attempting to estimate based on a counterfactual, which is what excess mortality is, it makes sense to have a confidence interval.
Well, I mean, so I think that brings me to the reason why I brought up this topic in the first place is if we weren't counting indirect effects of hurricanes and other natural disasters before, especially in light of the fact that climate change, the science of climate change seems to be telling us that we'll be having more of these events and these events will continue to be more and more destructive. Shouldn't we be on board with conducting more studies like this, not necessarily with the same assumptions, but definitely looking to count excess rates of mortality in light of these disasters?
I'm sure the constraint. I mean, put as much money as you want into it. I don't think you'll get much pushback from scholars, right? We'd be like, yeah, sure, please. I think the money is probably the binding or the limiting factor in this situation. If the government were to do it, I'll take the money and I'll develop that expertise as soon as possible. but in all seriousness, I love this example as a prism for. I don't want to make this the objectivity podcast because we could easily burn all this year discussing it.
To the extent that you're taking this as here's a social problem, you know, which is kind of mediated by nature, right? Here's a social problem that leads to a problem in nature that leads to a social problem. You know, and you're trying to basically diagnose this, presenting yourself as, you know, we are the social change actors is not going to convince people. And to the extent that people kind of raise their hackles and get their guards up and say like, oh, I don't know about that. You know, you're just saying this because you don't want to make America great. You know, it doesn't help if you have things like the objectivity statement. This is exactly the reason why you want to have the white lab coats and, you know, have this idea of like, you know, oh, I haven't even thought about that. This might possibly have political implications.
You know what else, though? When I see this situation, it's also, or this discussion, it seems to be like people are misunderstanding what a journal article does. And there was a great tweet. I forget who put it out.
That was Gary King. Yeah. And he was talking about the 1.96 thing and p-hacking. And he was basically making a defense of the suspicious clustering of findings just above 1.96 to say that, A, you don't want to just confirm what's obvious, which is what would give you a more natural distribution for the T. And B, you know, you want to check things that are more iffy. And then B, you know, you're not establishing it for all time. You're just saying this is plausible. So other people should continue to look at this. You know, I don't completely buy that, but I also think it's a good provocation, you know, to the hardcore replication people.
I don't know if that's the one because the main point that I drew from it was different. But what that means is when someone publishes statistical findings, it does not mean that word of God truth, objective reality is shining in your eyes. What it means is someone collected data, they applied statistical analyses that people are acquainted with, and this is what they found. I went out there, this is what I found in numbers. And it's not more than that. And I think that maybe some of this friction over objectivity, especially with the whole quantitative thing, is a misunderstanding of what is being claimed in these articles and what people are trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it, but you know, whatever. I'll just throw in a straw man here, right? And you know, let's just talk about, you know, Herrnstein and Murray and the bell curve, right? I mean, that was all constructed supposedly objectively using these objective methods and without an agenda, and they came up with the results that they came up with, right?
But it was possible to replicate and re-engineer and criticize because, you know, it's you can figure out ways in a quantitative study to figure out, you know, how they asked the question, how they gathered the data, and the methods that they use. And you can go out to another school and replicate it. And if it doesn't replicate, well, you can publish
that's
that.
That's all true, right? That's all true if they actually provide you with the data that they used.
They did. You could download the PSID right now.
I'm not saying they didn't.
I'm not PSID, NLSY. But yeah. Anyway, yes, I get what you're saying.
Right? So that's, I mean, all that aside, right, to make, I don't understand how anyone can claim, right, that the assumptions that they had to make, right, without having to prove, these are just background assumptions, the background assumptions that they used, right, in order to then move forward with their analyses were objective in any way.
The interesting thing, though, about this broader issue is about whether people trust facts or suspect that all information that's produced by social scientists or media outlets has some kind of political agenda. And that puts the Pew Research Center in an interesting place in the public information sphere, because we are explicitly nonpartisan and are really trying to do what you described, Joe, earlier, of doing objective social science, putting data out there, and then actors on all parts of the political spectrum can take our data and use that as they see fit. And if we're successful, they view us as an organization that has integrity and is not trying to push any particular political agenda.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.